The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. How are you?
Yeah, pretty good. Thank you. Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. Very interesting to hear about what's happening on the campaign trail in South Africa.
Absolutely.
I have to say that it doesn't sound a lot different from some of the things that we're having to deal with on our
Dina,
our campaign.
Dina, have you looked at Israeli campaigning at all?
I have. And you know, I don't know if you saw the Purim ad with Netanyahu in the Purim party.
Yes.
And I loved it because, you know, it's just so not political. It's it's almost very, it's comical, it's entertaining, and it's not what you'd expect from a political leader. And people see Netanyahu as this harsh, sort of,
yeah, so it kind of makes him much more personable.
Exactly. And I think that's what he was going for. It makes him personable. It makes him like more approachable and likable as a human being. But I mean, what's only going on in Israel, I mean, it's also a bit, and he's going the strong right versus the weak left. And
yeah, it's very, quite, very.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Anthony, absolutely. What is happening?
And actually those Purim clips, the one that you saw, Dino, which was very funny, is part of a series that he's done. I mean, you know, that's Netanyahu, and he's done that sort of stuff before. So it is exactly what he wants to achieve, make himself personable. He likes to go to the shuk and meet the shuk vendors and you know, taste their nuts and taste their the things that they're selling, and have crowds of people around him, you know, the regular man in the street, and of course the TV cameras to show that he's connecting with the man in the street. But it's interesting that Benny Gantz has come out with this concept of two terms only, along the lines of the US presidential limitations, where a president can only serve for two terms. And even people who are not necessarily supporters of Gantz and his party, I think, quite like the idea of limiting the prime ministerial period to two terms in order to prevent this notion that people become a little bit detached from the man in the street, to limit the period which leaders can be elected for. And so, of course, Gantz is saying, well, if you support the notion of a limit of two terms, then now's your time to vote Netanyahu out. He's done his time. So really that's what he's trying to use, whether he would actually implement the two-term law or not if he was to be elected is an interesting discussion to have. But I certainly feel that there is something to be said in favor of that.
Yeah, certainly. But I wouldn't have thought during an election is the time to address that issue, because it rather makes it, I think it weakens Gantz. I think it makes him look like he's petrified that, that this is kind of the only way he'll get Netanyahu out.
Well, it's very much neck and neck at the moment. And, you know, even the opinion polls are finding it very, very difficult to call who will ultimately get the most seats in the Knesset. 120 seats are up for grabs in the polls tomorrow. Of course, the party that can put together a coalition with 61 seats or more will rule, will form the next government. And it doesn't necessarily mean that that party is going to be the one with the most seats in the Knesset. And I think that Prime Minister Netanyahu has almost given in to the possibility that the blue and white coalition may well be the largest party in the Knesset following tomorrow's polls. But they will still, and I think he's relying on the fact that they will still struggle to form a coalition government, even if they are the largest party. And so it's going to be very, very interesting to see once the election results are known late tomorrow night, and more likely early Wednesday morning, we'll get a very good feel as to what the lie of the land is, and which parties have made it through the minimum threshold, and who the likely largest party will be in the Knesset. And then the president, Ruvi Rivlin, will be called upon to invite one of the party leaders to form a government, and that whole process will probably take a few weeks, even longer perhaps, until all the negotiations are done and a government can be formed. And as I said before, it's not necessarily the case that the first leader who is called upon to form the government, because the president has already said he will invite the leader with the largest number of seats in the Knesset to form the government. And it's not taken for granted that that individual and that party will be successful in forming the government. So there's still a long way to go, even beyond tomorrow's election, to see how the new Israeli government will be made up.
How does it work in the interim? I mean, what happens? So let's say tomorrow whoever gets the majority is asked to form a government. They're going to try and do that. There's going to be this negotiations, which can only, I can only imagine what must go on for the next couple of weeks. What happens during this time? Who, you know, does it place Israel in a vulnerable position for this period?
Well, what's happened since the election was called is effectively that the Knesset was resolved. The Knesset voted on a resolution to dissolve itself ahead of the election, and the government just continues to rule. So Prime Minister Netanyahu has continued to rule the country with his cabinet and with his government, even though the Knesset has been dissolved. And that situation will continue until such time as the Knesset reconstitutes itself and that the vote is taken in the Knesset to form the new government. So obviously the 61 seats are required in order to vote in favor of the new government. And at that point, the government will be sworn in and the old government will be relieved of its duties. So we have an interim situation. We have had an interim situation for some time since the election was called, and that will continue until the new government is formed, until the Knesset is back in session again.
What is the position with the Arab parties? There was talks of boycotts, of not boycotts. What is the latest on that?
Well, there are two Arab lists out of the 13 parties in total who will be contesting tomorrow's election, whereas in the last election, the Arab lists managed to come together to combine to form a single list. Now they are running as two separate lists. So even within the Arab-Israeli community, there is a lot of disagreement about the platform and how they should present themselves. So those Arab parties will run those two lists. And the latest polls that I've seen suggest that something like 50% of Arab Israelis are likely to turn up to vote, which is obviously quite a lot lower than the national average of people who are turning up to vote. We're expecting it to be probably in the 70s, is my guess. 70% or more of people who are eligible to vote will turn up and vote. So within the Arab-Israeli community, slightly less, but still 50% of the people voting. And I think that, you know, that's something we don't take for granted necessarily.
Anthony, what happens on election day in Israel? Is it a public holiday?
So it's a public holiday. Everybody has the opportunity to take off work and to go and vote. Places will be open. Entertainment will be open. Restaurants will be open. Many of the shops will be open. And people who do work will A, be entitled to take time off from their work to go to the polls, and B, will be entitled to more than their regular hourly rate, because it's an official public holiday, and I think that double time will apply for those people who work. So it's a bit of a kind of a party atmosphere day. Polling stations will be set up largely within schools. People will be able to go to their local school to vote. Everybody will have been sent a voting card specifying exactly which polling station they need to attend. Soldiers in the army have already started voting.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And polling stations have been set up at military bases up and down the country to allow every soldier to exercise his vote at his military base, which is not the case. For example, students who might be studying away from home will need to return to their homes in order to exercise their vote at their local polling station. You can't just turn up anywhere. You have to turn up where you've been designated, where they have your name on the list, and you will be entitled to vote there. The vote is for a political party and not for an individual. We might lose sight of that because the campaign has been so focused on individuals that we lose sight of the fact that when we go into the polling station, what happens is that all of the different parties will have a little slip of paper, and each person will be presented with an envelope that they go into the polling station. They have to pick up the little slip of paper that represents their chosen party that they wish to vote for, and they simply put it into the envelope and seal the envelope. And I think it might even go into it doesn't go into a second envelope. There are those envelopes that are double sealed, like the military and others. They have so-called double sealed envelopes. So we just get one envelope. We go behind the little screen. We choose the piece of of paper that represents the party that we wish to vote for. In it goes into the envelope. We come out from behind the screen with a sealed envelope and pop it in the little voting box, which is in front of the people, the witnesses who are there. They see you put it into the box, and that's the way that the vote is taken. And of course, it's a proportionate representation system. So the party with the largest number of votes percentage-wise across the whole country will then have the allocation of the largest number of Knesset seats. A minimum voting threshold is required. If you don't pass the voting threshold, it's almost 4 seats in the Knesset. You will get no representatives in the Knesset. Those votes that are cast for the parties that ultimately don't have any representation in the Knesset will be split amongst the other parties proportionately. So therefore, it is possible that certain parties might gain an extra seat if they're on the threshold. They might gain an extra seat by virtue of the reallocation of those votes that are cast for parties that will ultimately not sit in the Knesset. So quite a lot of technical stuff that goes on in terms of calculating who gets how many seats. And of course, once each party is allocated the number of seats, then the first X number of candidates on their list will get those seats. So for example, in the case of the Likud, if they manage to re-achieve 30 seats, which they have at the moment, then the top 30 names on their list will be their members of parliament. And of course, similarly, the other parties. So that's the way that the system works. The polls are due to close at about 10 o'clock tomorrow night. So I assume soon after that, we'll begin to hear exit polls and things like that. As I've said before, you know, the opinion polls have been backwards and forwards, particularly with the Likud and the Kahol Lavan coalition. Nobody's really able to make a call as to who will come out either with the highest number of seats or indeed who will be able to form the coalition government, because there are really two questions, not only one. So I think it's going to be fascinating with 13 parties contesting this election, coming from the left and the right and from all over the place. I think it is going to be interesting. The thing that I have found interesting particularly is the recovery that the Labour Party have achieved during the course of the campaign. At one point, there was a question as to whether they would even achieve the minimum threshold in order to sit in Parliament, which would have been an absolute disastrous situation for Labour. They now have recovered to the point where it looks like they're probably going to achieve a similar, you know, 10, 12, 13 seats perhaps, as opposed to getting none at all. So I think, that, you know, for me, that's been an incredible recovery from, you know, almost being wiped out to now looking pretty safe with 10 or perhaps even more seats. Chozrim la'avodah is the tagline that they've used, returning to Labour. But of course, the word avodah is not only the name for the Labour Party, but is also the word that we use for work. So returning to work, returning to the Labour Party, that's the tagline that they've used to try and play on the words. And I think it's worked for them. They realised that people will have to return to them in order for them to even exist in the next parliament.
Right. Absolutely. And, of course, so we'll be following this very, very closely. It'll be fascinating to see how these things evolve over the next few days. Anthony Reich, thank you
indeed,
as always.
We'll talk tomorrow, and tomorrow will be election day as usual, and we'll talk again, and we will see. It's all going to be fascinating and interesting to see how all of this pans out.
Absolutely right. That's Anthony Reich with the Israel Report. Just wrapping up the sports question, when last did Watford play in the FA Cup final? That's what Louis Karpis wanted to know from you. Taking a look at some of your answers, 1984 says Rakhadi, and Google, she says, in brackets. Early 80s, Elton John's team, says Colin S. 1985, says Michael C. And David Zimmerman says Watford played against Everton in the FA Cup in 1984. Indeed, that is the correct answer. They played in 1984. They lost 2-0 to Everton. It's gone 8 o'clock. Here's your news with Zanatti.